under the breach, dear friend.
Else close the wall up with our English dead.
And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, with another exciting episode of The Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. You didn't say that enthusiastically.
I've said my name so many times.
Yeah, well,
really
you need
hard.
To be excited about saying your name.
My name. Okay, I can be excited about this.
Think about the good part about it. It's been shortened. It used to be McHildevitir.
Right. Before that was McFian Gioler.
Oh, man. I mean, so the whole issue is that now that her name is shortened and so easy to say, we should be excited about it.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. I am now excited. Okay.
Okay, that's good. All right. Let's see. We've done once more into the breach. Oh, yeah. We're supposed to disclose and disclaim at this point. The disclosure is don't believe anything we say. The disclaimer is we are unqualified to say almost anything. Does that make sense? That would cover it, you know?
Well, yeah, that is a little extreme, I would say.
Oh, well, the disclosure is that the Personal Wealth Coach is the name of this radio program. It is also the name of an investment advisory firm in Slato, Texas, registered with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission. That's just to let you know who regulates us. Not to say that they've approved or disapproved.
Yes. Let's see. Close cover.
Oh, yeah. Right. And then let's see. Nothing we say on here should be considered or deemed to be investment advice, but rather it's educational. The stuff we talk about has been obtained from sources generally considered to be reliable, but is not warranted or guaranteed to be true. If you receive this email in error, please return it and destroy it, or else destroy it and return it. What else should we say?
Let's see. In the event that this is live, it is not a recorded episode until later. In the event that it's recorded, it was only live once.
Right.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's some other stuff we could say that we should say that the lawyers would want us to say.
Basically.
Securities when purchased may be higher or lower in price than when sold.
There is a really good disclaimer that should be on everything.
What's that?
Common sense is appropriate.
Defining common sense.
The problem with common
issue.
Sense is that I think we all know it's not very common.
The problem.
Wait a minute. If we all know it, is it common sense that common sense is not common?
Well, the problem is one man's common sense is another woman's foolishness.
It's true. And using the common sense.
You notice the way I said that.
The fabric weaving industry with the oil drilling industry might not be appropriate. You don't want to get your lines woven together in the oil industry at all. So.
You got it.
Common sense
needs its
appropriate place, I guess.
But we'll also tell you that you can inject some sense and sensibility into this radio program if today is July 15th, where you are, of 2017. You're certainly welcome to give us a call at 254-773-1400, and I can tell you without a moment's hesitation that we will do our best to answer the telephone if the equipment works. And I don't know. I haven't got my email up and running yet, but in a few minutes I will have my email up and running, and then you can call. You can actually send an email to Jeff@tpwc.com
or Jake@tpwc.com.
You get yours up?
I do.
Oh, how'd you get yours up?
Well, I thought I had.
Oh well, you're ahead of me. That's cool. Okay, so what happened this week?
Let's see. In the market.
Yes.
I would say that it opened, this week it was open all 5 days, which is very different than last week. Some, mm-hmm. They were just lazy for a day in there last week. But this week we had market activity every day, all day. The end result of that activity, do you want me to say it? Or
the Dow Jones Industrial Average closed at 21,637.74. And very notably, by the way, the newspaper, the Wall Street Journal, has chosen not to put a comma in there.
On the number?
Right. 21,634 or 2,459 for the S&P 500. And I read a little article on this that they have editorially decided that commas are not necessary
In their index numbers?
In their index numbers. They should be used in everything except index numbers. Boy.
They kind of run together if you're not careful, though.
Yeah, and they said, well, they'll reconsider it when it gets to six figures, which is a market forecast if ever I heard one. Anyway, the Dow was up 1.04%. Year to date, it's up 9.59%. And for 52 weeks, it's up 16.86. The S&P 500, the one we follow a little more closely this week, was up 1.41, so it pulled ahead of the Dow, 1.41%.
Okay, good. Not just points.
No, not just points. The year-to-date, it's up 9.85%, almost 10% in the S&P 500 year-to-date, which is a lot. The 52-week gain right now, meaning from this time last year, is 13.76. And if you quick do some figures, year to date is just over 6 months, and it's up almost 10%. But for 1 year, it's up 13.76, which means most of the up has been this year.
Yes.
Yes. The higher, the further higher the up.
The higher, the fewer the up.
I think. Okay. Well, I think that's probably true. So what does that mean? It means a couple of things. One, nothing truly significant has changed in the last year except that earnings have risen in U.S. corporations, U.S.-based corporations, the ones that are included in the S&P 500 or in the Dow Jones Industrial Average. As earnings have risen, people have said, hey, that company is making more money. Let's buy it. And the price per share of the companies have gone up. So that has been happening. It isn't any of the things that hit the headlines. It has nothing to do with who's president. As a matter of fact, I took a look at the charts today that show the Standard & Poor's 500 or Dow Jones Industrial Average, and you see it climbing. And then as the presidential campaign heats up, it levels off and dips a little bit.
Yeah, stayed flat for a while there.
Because of and Jake hit this right on the head last year when he said, when you don't have an incumbent president running for office, there's nobody defending the economy. You have two different sets of people who are attacking the past.
These are the things that are wrong, and here's how I will fix it. Or just not saying that part. That's more politically savvy, is just to say these are what's wrong with the world.
And we had an election, and there was what people in, used to being professionally in the market call a relief rally. And the relief rally jumped the market up and said, look, that's amazing. We elected, and it really, I hate to say this, if you're a Republican, you're not going to like this. If you're a Democrat, it's going to make you scratch your head. Don't hurt yourself. The mere fact that we elected somebody and we got over the continued bashing of the United States caused a relief. It appears now that caused a relief rally.
No, this is something. There's another piece of trueness that has to come in here. Trump is the one that was elected. He's the president.
He is.
And so that rally is appropriately called the Trump bump.
Absolutely.
It is because he was elected that the market went up. Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of optimism because we were going to see by now, by this point, 6 months into the new year, we're going to have
holding hands together, singing Kumbaya.
And a dramatic reduction in taxes and health care for everybody at a lower premium.
I was excited about that.
Oh, yeah. The whole issue of everybody's health care, everybody would be covered as opposed to about 80% of the people being covered. And the price of healthcare would go down, and we would have
tax reform, health reform.
We were going to have all that stuff by now.
And possibly education reform.
Right. All this stuff was going to happen, and people got enthusiastic and excited. And then it didn't happen. And this is the key, though.
Or it hasn't happened yet. We can still hope.
Well, it didn't. It's past tense. Didn't happen.
It hasn't happened yet.
Something could happen in the future, although
chances are not looking really great.
Yeah, the Wall Street Journal survey of economists, and they go across both parties, said, no, we don't think we're going to have tax reform. Not this year.
Yeah. Well,
not next year.
That's just – it's a – an opinion, and it's an opinion of educated people, but it's not necessarily an educated opinion. It's an opinion based on their perspective.
Yeah, but
I'm throwing this out there because I don't want to discount anything right now. I was surprised by who was elected. All of the numbers said Trump won't be elected. I was surprised that he was immediately knocked over as far as his political clout, because he did surprise everyone with that. So I will say that it's possible to be surprised again.
Yes.
I don't think that we're going to have all the great reforms, but I would sure love to be surprised in the other direction.
Yeah, and me, you, ditto. But the thing I wanted to get to here, and this is probably the most important thing I want to say here, is that all the noise and fury for and against whatever you are for or against.
Right. Whichever way
that is. If you take the pre-campaign trend line and you just keep drawing it in a straight line, you have this dip during the campaign. You have a slight rise above it right after the election, and then it dips back down again.
But we have a nice smooth line.
And all you get is a dip and a bump, and then now we're back on the smooth line. But the smooth line is really important in this case, and it's really important because we have seasonal effects in the market that hit most years. And those seasonal effects are summed up in an old saying, sell in May and go away, because towards the end of May, the market normally takes a slump, and then it slumps into June, and then around the beginning of July, it gets into a serious slump. And we did get a little bit of a slump in May. And everybody said, here it comes, here it comes. The traders are all going to go off on vacation in the Berkshires, and where it's cool as opposed to where it's hot, and nobody's going to be buying stocks, and here comes the slump. And a lot of people anticipated that and traded out of the market in anticipation of the slump.
Well,
and then the market just hit a record high yesterday, July 14th. This is typically when we're in the middle of the midsummer doldrum slump, and instead we're hitting record highs.
Right. You know, this is something you brought up here that is worth pointing out. We tend to be extremely hyper aware of the big changes that are happening in the market or in anywhere else, any type of market, grocery store prices, as they're happening. But then we tend to forget them really quickly. And I'll throw this out there as a experiment. How long ago was it that we had $3.90 or $4 a gallon gasoline?
5 years ago?
It was 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
We tend to relegate those events because the change was so drastic, but then was flat afterwards, relatively flat. We tend to think of those drastic changes as being further back in our memory than they really are.
Mm.
And when we're talking about the Trump bump, people are starting to forget about that. Even though it was a very nice event when it happened, they're starting to forget about it. They're starting to forget about when the drastic shift happened in oil prices. So it would have been January of 2015 that the peak of the gas prices, oil prices peaked out a couple of months before that, but with the lag in the gas prices. And what, you know, people remember talking about, you know, some gas stations, we got calls on the radio here. Some gas stations still have the big old prices, the really tall, big prices that nobody wants to pay. And why aren't they changing them? Aren't they going to go out of business? And it was just the lag effect of when they purchased the contract for that gas, and they may have purchased it right at the peak of that market. We tend to forget drastic changes as long as we've had lack of volatility, no big changes lately. We tend to push it further back in our mind, which is a little bit scary when you think about we may start forgetting to be afraid of things that are real dangers.
Oh, we are.
And we do that in a whole series of areas.
And the thing that – one of the – you know, we should be – you're talking about at the beginning of the show, we're talking about we really need to be happy and excited.
Right. Yeah, now I'm talking about we need to remember to be afraid.
No, this is the point. 50% cut in the price of gas. That's exciting.
Yeah, very exciting. And yet
We're living in it.
Two and a half.
No big deal.
It's been over. If I had said your gas prices have dropped 50% in 2.5 years, that could be a headline, and people would go, "Whoa, oh, it has." But we experienced it, and even when it was the drastic event, we talked about it a little bit. But we don't like to average those events out in our mind. We don't like to say that for this 2.5 year period, we've had very inexpensive gas prices, because it's just the norm. It's the same concept as the frog in the pot of water. If you raise the temperature slowly, it stays comfortable until it isn't comfortable at all.
You know, I've heard about that experiment. I've never known anyone who's actually done it.
I've cooked some frogs, but they were dead when I was cooking them.
So they were unlikely to jump out of the pot no matter what you
do. No, and I have also done experiments in school where we applied electricity to legs of frogs. So I think I could combine the two and cook a dead frog with electricity and see if it could jump out. But that's pretty morbid.
Yes, it is. And then probably we'd get in a lot of trouble if we were to put a frog in a pan of water and heat it up very slowly and cook it.
Yeah, it's probably not.
ASPCA and the animal rights organizations would probably get after us.
We would get painted.
The earnings expectation, and at this point, since the second quarter is over, earnings expectations for the second quarter tend to be fairly accurate, is that corporate earnings in the United States should rise 6 to 8%, depending on which source you read. They range from the low end at 6 and the upper end at 8. In the second quarter versus the first quarter. I'm not talking about annualized earnings. I'm talking about that the earnings in the second quarter of corporations in the United States, the profits, the things that represent the value when you buy a stock or a mutual fund, are expected to be up 6 to 8%. And so that is a really good reason for the market to hit some new highs, because we're seeing the corporations represented in equities in the United States being quite profitable, and their profit growing at a pretty fast clip, despite the fact that when we look at the economy and we look at the gross domestic product of the United States, it ain't so hot. I mean, it's growing, but it's not growing very fast. I mean, if you look at the economy, the numbers, and we go into those numbers, I'm sure you've got a lot of them too. Mm-hmm. Wage growth year over year after adjusting for inflation in the United States is up 1.1%, which is not much. I mean, if your income went up 1.1% in the last year, I don't think you will have noticed it.
And that's if you make $100,000 a year and they give you a 1.1% increase, that's $1,100 spread out over a month, and it's somewhere around $97, $83.
Yeah, something like that.
No, it was $1,100. It's like $90-something dollars.
Okay.
And so if you're paid twice a month, then you're now talking about
$45.
$48, $49, $50
and
a month.
And don't forget that
or a paycheck.
You're paying taxes on that.
Right. So when we say that, it's good that we've had positive. It really is. But it is not something that anybody's noticed. And we really need more than that to cause people to be more confident. Mm-hmm. I think that will be coming. You had our discussion and your writing about what the head economist at Morningstar said about why wage growth has been so slow. I've got some stuff to add to that, but I want you to throw that out there first.
Okay, that was a revelation. You know, we've written in our newsletter that we do every week about the fact that a couple of the main job placement, job creation areas in the United States, healthcare and the public sector, recently municipalities just started hiring again because their property taxes went
right
up. But both
real
of them
recovery.
Both of them are restricted in how much money they can pay people because their income is fixed. They can't make higher profits.
Right.
But that wasn't enough to really explain why in this recovery wage growth has been much, much, much lower than it has historically. And so what Bob Johnson at Morningstar came up with after digging through the numbers, and I went and looked at the numbers and doggone it, just he's a famous PhD, one of the leading economists in the country, and he was right, as far as I could tell. What happens is during the Great
the Great Recession.
And right. the very, very cautious expansion that went on, recovery that went on afterwards. Two things occurred. One, a lot of younger people simply didn't join the job force because they were disheartened and they stayed home with their parents. And we talked about that a lot. A lot of people, the number of people in their 20s living with their parents was at the highest level that we've since we've been counting such things. And a lot of people hit their normal retirement age, whatever that might be for them, and decided to keep working because they were scared. I mean, the market just took a dip. Their 401k took a dip. They are concerned. And finally, the last several years, they have started to get more confident and have started to retire. And at the same time, those people who are living at home in the basement with their mama got really tired of it and started joining the workforce and going into apartments. And both of those trends are going on. Well, the interesting thing is we have job growth because at the low end of the employment spectrum, we have a lot of people being hired who are entry-level people. But we have a lot of people retiring who are the most senior people out there who are making a lot more money than the people who are being hired. So if you're hiring a lot of low-wage people and you're retiring a lot of high-wage people, even though there's a more jobs every month, you won't see wages go up very much simply because you're just getting more efficient.
All right. They're
But it takes two of the low wage people to do what one of the high wage people did, so we don't gain productivity.
So they're aging out the higher pay and hiring younger people. On top of that, there's another piece that's making sure that the economy lags a little slower than it would have been. It's still moving forward, but slower than it would have been in a similar circumstance before, is that even if the wages that are being paid to these younger people are comparable, are good wages, they have less money to spend because of the student loan debt
right. That's
hanging out there.
Yeah, that's a problem.
So there, it takes a greater boost, and one of the things that's fascinating is over the next 10 years, in about 10 years, we're going to see a big bump in the economy,
yes,
as the people that are getting jobs right now, which is a larger group than normal. Think of it as like a snake swallowing an egg. This big lump of new hiring that's taken place. In 10 years, when they have the student loans paid off, there's suddenly going to be that big lump of money available to be spent in the economy.
When the shell breaks inside the
right,
snake.
Exactly. That's. I don't know that we can continue that analogy. Actually, I don't know that it fits anymore. But
well,
yeah.
It's better than the rabbit being swallowed by the snake.
Yes. Yeah. And we have a caller on 773-1400. Caller, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Yeah. The Great Recession that you guys talked about. It seemed like the recovery is an extended time.
It is.
Is this different from the other big recessions we've had in the past? And if it is, why? I'll hang up and listen.
Okay.
Oh, I love those questions.
Yeah, that's great. No.
Yes.
And the big
and
one.
I'll say
and yes.
Yes
on the little ones. The big reason, the one across the board that's easiest to look at, if you look at the last great anything, and that it was great downturn period, was the Great Depression. And coming out of from the beginning of the Depression on, we had an extremely slow recovery in the unemployment area. Employment just did not come back and did not come back until
we had
all
big,
of a sudden
we had a stimulus.
Yeah, there was a massive government stimulus.
Called World War II.
World War II happened.
We need a good war.
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
A good war.
A good war would be nice, but they're really hard to find. So the whole concept here is that in some ways it's very normal, but it's hard to measure that. If we look at the trend line of the Great Depression, employment recovered at a faster rate until it got left behind completely by the major stimulus of suddenly everybody was in the Army or the Navy, Air Force.
Well, that actually
it wasn't the Air Force yet. But
you know, we had the Great Depression, which 1929, it kind of started. It really got kicked into gear in 1934, and then we recovered, and then we had a second dip
right
in 37. And if you move forward to 1973, you have a dip, 50% drop in the market. You have all of these, and it's the first, the one in the 1920s was the 1930s rather, was a deflationary depression. We actually had a form of depression 1973 through about 1980.
It was an infression.
It kind of ended in 87, 88.
An infression instead of a depression.
And it was inflationary. You know, we didn't feel it as much because we had runaway inflation as opposed to runaway deflation. And we did, you know, there's a lot of things happened that didn't happen, but it was a similar double dip.
You're right. And this was something I didn't think of this. I said the only other great anything, I was wrong. The president has a precedent here.
The president has a precedent?
Yes.
Or is it the
great malaise?
Yes, yes.
Jimmy Carter said
Gemma.
Gemma Carter. A great malaise
has settled across the nation.
We should be kind to him. He collapsed at a Habitat for Humanity
from dehydration
job site
yes.
this week.
And he should drink more.
The fact that he's out there doing that.
Yes,
I'm
impressed.
It's very respectful.
But it was in Canada.
Yes.
Anyway.
Just like my American-built car was North American built. It's just,
right.
It came from Canada. I didn't know. I thought I was buying an American car, and then I looked at the manual. Oh, made in Canada.
The 51st and a half state is
right.
Canada. Anyway, don't tell them that, though.
No.
They get very upset.
No, I was just there. That's not a good thing. No, not at all.
Anyway, what we had this event that occurred that began in 1973 and ended with the second downturn. It was a recession, and it was a stock market crash, and it was all that kind of stuff in 1982, which finally finished off its last twitch in 1987. And then we've had this one we've recently been through. Again, double dip, 2000 through 2002, 50% drop in the market, a fairly good, fast recovery that was we've now realized was hollow and was artificial.
And then
we
propped up on the finance world's
we had
financing
the, right.
of too much stuff.
So then in 2007 through 9,
the second dip.
We
the
got the second
dip.
And here's the issue about this one, though. It's like since it was deflationary, major bear market recessions are very, very, very slow to recover. Just like unless you have a war. Now, when Ronald Reagan was elected, he had a good war.
Right. And let me throw you out. The Cold War was a good war.
It was.
We spent a lot of money and hired a lot of people doing
it. Yeah. We tremendous stimulus into the economy through the military.
Technology
right?
was, if you think of the boom years of the space shuttle. The money being
right.
spent on NASA, on exploration, on Star Wars missile defense stuff, all the stuff that was going mm-hmm. on, all that money was hiring people.
Basically, Franklin Delano Roosevelt inspired us. We spent a lot of money fighting the evil empire. We invaded Panama and Grenada successfully.
Mm-hmm.
And those were pretty good wars. And
and
we came out of that with a booming economy. And you know,
and then we went a step further and attacked Iraq, and
that was bad.
Well, it was a good war, but then we didn't leave the place in any way a non-threat.
Yeah,
when
but
we
it,
left,
and it did not. It was kind of a half war. I mean, we really never got serious about it, and we never really cranked up the economy. We borrowed money off the books,
right?
You know, and this is the thing that, and you know, you want a parallel to that. As much as I hate to admit it, the liberals were right on this one. Vietnam was an extension of Korea and Vietnam were extensions of World War II, where we tried to copy the success of World War II on the cheap.
Right.
We didn't go to a full war footing, and we didn't completely commit to A, destroying, and B, rebuilding what we
occupying
conquered.
Occupying and rebuilding.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's something that we only have a few troops in Iraq and Afghanistan mm-hmm. right now, and they're looking about adding more troops in Afghanistan. But the reality is that we haven't made it we've done it on the cheap, and because mm-hmm. we've done it on the cheap, it's become more expensive than doing it the whole hog way.
Right now, what the economists are saying about this recovery and I happen to agree completely despite all the screams to the contrary, it is under-leveraged.
There's not enough debt.
There's not enough borrowing and lending going right. on to stimulate things, to get things rolling, because the banks are under some pretty onerous conditions saying don't loan any money.
Right, and this is one of the reasons why we really looked forward to regulatory mm-hmm. reform and to a loosening of that. We're starting to see that, but the regulations are still so thick. It is so difficult to get a loan, and that's a problem. It's a problem that will go on for quite some time. This, mm-hmm. let me. I'm gonna throw a facet in here
we
if you don't mind.
We need some Nazis.
Yeah. If we needed some people that we can go out and say they're the evil
they're,
something.
They're ultimately evil, and it would be good if we have a phenomenal technological edge over them so we can fight them without any Americans getting killed.
And here's the thing, before the conservative side out there gets up in arms over the whole idea of government stimulus, the idea is to do that stimulus in a short but dramatic fashion and then have the government completely out of it again. And that seems to work really, really well.
And then raise taxes and pay off the debt.
Right. And this is something I spoke about a couple of weeks ago on the air here, but it's one that I think fits nicely here. Regulations have an effect that dilutes inspiration. It sounds like I'm giving some
Whoa.
Kind of a pep talk here.
You sound like Kellyanne Conway here. Well, let's go for it. I want to hear this.
The truth is that if you want to start a business because it's been an exciting thing for you to do, and I've seen this happen. So this is not anecdotal, but it's true real evidence. People get all excited about starting a new business. They run the numbers. They have near certainty of profitability. So in the case in question, there was a speech pathologist that was working on a business. And the difficulty in figuring out how to get paid through the insurance market based on whether or not that she was being or he was being paid with Medicaid, Medicare, different insurance companies, what the regulations were, how much you were allowed to charge for your time, all of that stuff became such a monstrous nightmare that this person didn't start the business. And that's a problem. There's one area that's really cool, in my opinion, about economics. One of the reasons why America has been a leader in inspiration, and this it sounds like I'm doing an about face. I think America really is still the absolute leader in inspiration and in creation. Right. Yeah, it's not a pep talk.
Oh, this is real. You can give me a pep talk. That's okay. I need a pep talk.
It is. We are way ahead in patents. We're way ahead on new inventions, new technology. If you look at the top 100 tech companies out there, 90 of them are the United States. So that's a big deal. It's really, really a big deal. We're still on the leading edge. One of the reasons why we are on the leading edge, or this is a sideline issue, but it's a good example of a lot of other areas in the United States. We have always considered energy, electricity in the United States to be necessary in large amounts. We have air conditioning all throughout the South, and that started coming in the 70s, where huge parts of Africa, Europe, and other areas didn't put in the infrastructure at a time when those countries were doing quite well. They didn't put in an electrical infrastructure in there. And most of Europe is this way, even Northern Europe. Their electrical infrastructure in a much smaller landmass was so regulated, so difficult to achieve, that you go to Canada, you go to Britain, you go to France, you've got a little timer on your light switch. Even if you're in a mansion, there's a timer on your light switch. So when you turn the light on, you've got 15 minutes to do whatever you were going to do.
And the lights go out.
Until you turn the timer back on.
Really?
And the reason is, and this particularly
is this a requirement
true,
up there?
No, but it was a requirement in a lot of Europe. not in Canada. Some areas of Canada, it was considered savings. There's an atmosphere of, if you've got that around, if those light switches are there and they have the timer on them, then it's don't use too much of it. That stifles innovation. In that, if you throw yourself in your thought process into a machine shop somewhere, and an apprentice is there, and he wants to try something new and different, so he walks over and he turns on the machine, and then someone in German yells at him to turn that off, he's wasting electricity, versus someone in the United States says, "Hey, let me see what you've got when you're done. That's really cool." That energy cost is important. This is another piece that this is a study that was done in the United Kingdom on livers and suicide rates. Liver transplants and suicide rates.
Okay. I thought you meant liver versus dire.
No, people that were having liver transplants on a regular basis. Uh-huh. And, the numbers,
wait, how many
transplants did you get this year? No, ongoing liver transplants annually, numbers on those, and the suicide rate by overdose on Tylenol in Great Britain, in the UK. I shouldn't say Great Britain, in the UK.
I want to hear this relationship.
In the year 2000, they put a regulation on making the Tylenol, prescription level and certain levels of Tylenol, into bubble packs so that you had to pop the pill out for each pill that you wanted. Their liver transplant rate dropped 30%, and their suicide rate by overdose for anything dropped drastically. And
so
these are people that would write notes and say, "I'm committing suicide.
But if it's inconvenient, I'm not going
to
do it."
Right. And inspiration.
I have to pop too many bubble packs to commit suicide, so I'm not going to commit suicide.
Exactly. Or I accidentally took too many Tylenol, and so here, have my liver. Those concepts, if it's a little bit inconvenient, you would think that suicide would be something that's planned out and advanced as a very – it tends to be a very temporary decision. One based on some very limited mood-based issues for a single time period, very short time period. The opposite of that emotion is inspiration. So if you have extreme depression or extreme inspiration, they're the opposite on a spectrum. And inconvenience can stifle that just as easily as it stifles the suicide rate in Great Depression. So the more regulations we have on how to create profit. I think I can be pretty confident that most people don't want fraud happening. People don't want someone to be starting a business that is really only about tricking people. But beyond that, if they're not hurting someone drastically, and that's got to be defined too, like over-competing or being a monopoly, those are good regulations. We don't want monopolies setting the prices well below anybody else so nobody can compete with them so that later on they can raise the price. We've got that in the drug market right now. But in the prescription drug market, there was already monopolies in the cartel drug market.
Well, it's just a game.
Right. All of this kind of wraps together into what we were talking about here. There are a lot of big decisions that need to get made. The Social Security Trust Fund just gave their report Thursday. Did you see that go by?
No. Oh, yeah. It runs out of money in 17 years.
Oh, yeah. 17 years if you calculate it that way. It runs out of money in 8 years by their own calculation if you consider this is the thing. One, they've been able to extend that further out. So it has a lot to do with what you were talking about with why jobs are recovering so slowly over this time period, is that people, the higher paid people are retiring and the younger paid people coming on are younger people are not being paid as well. Okay.
Younger paid people.
Yeah, yes.
I like that. That's a good term. I'm gonna coin that one.
The reason why they've been able to extend Social Security is that there's two trust funds there, one's for disability and one's for retirement. And the disability one is a lot smaller than the retirement one.
Mm-hmm.
But it runs out of money very quickly. They've been able to extend that because they were surprised that when people on disability reached retirement age, they switched over to the retirement program.
Because it pays more.
No, it pays the same.
It does. Oh, but automatic?
It's an automatic. They shouldn't have been surprised by it. That extended the life expectancy of both programs.
And the people who were on them.
And the people that were, yeah, and the people that were on them. So the concept here is as these folks are retiring out of disability, they're now retired, they're spending the same amount of money, but it's on a larger lump of money. So it doesn't fail any of the one programs. It's still an issue in that they calculated the 17-year number by looking at if Social Security retirement on its own without any extra draw from disability wouldn't be making less money from the revenue and surplus than
it's getting a little complicated.
Yeah, basically there is extra money going in there from taxes that are designed to pay for it. And at some point the revenue from that not only dries up, but goes negative.
Do we have a caller?
We do.
You're on the air with the personal wealth. No, you're not. You're gone. I don't blame you. We talked too much.
Yeah, we talked too much. Yeah. Stop talking.
But speaking of talking too much, we have about 12 minutes left in this hour, and we have some something or another that KTEM wants us to play on the air, right?
Yes, we've got some commercials to play. So
either commercials or PSAs or something.
Yeah, if you would like to talk to us at the end of the break, the phone number in here is 773-1400. That's 254-773-1400.
Somebody's calling.
All right, we'll put them on before we do commercials.
All right. You're on the air with the personal wealth coach. Go ahead.
Hello? Hello? Hello?
Yes, sir. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yes. Yep, you're on the air.
Listen, man, I don't want to put you two people on the spot or nothing, but it's just something that I've just been thinking about here lately. You know, on all this construction they got going on for all these years on this I-35.
Yes, sir.
You know, there's been quite a few people that have, you know, I guess at nighttime it's kind of confusing out there, you know, and you can get hurt if you're not paying attention. And there's been recently quite a bit of real bad accidents out there. Would you say that the engineers and the people that are in charge of putting all these signs and detours and all this, you know, do you think they make it kind of confusing for the public due to the fact of all the accidents and, you know, mishaps that they've been having out there? You know, to make a long story short, do you think the government's doing this on purpose just to eliminate people out there to get goofy on it? You have a good day, huh?
No.
Thanks for the call.
Appreciate the call.
Yeah, there's a contracting firms. They're private citizens. They may be paid by the state or by the national government through an employer who's paid by another employer who's been, there's like three or four or five levels of contractors on any government project.
You could say that it's an intelligence test.
It could be.
And if you don't
of the person putting up the signs or of the person trying to follow the signs put up by someone who may have failed the test.
But ultimately the objective here is to make the highway safer in the process of construction while using something. If you'll think about how complex it is, if you think about somebody, okay, we're going to completely rebuild your car from the wheels up and you're going to drive it the whole time we're doing it.
Whoa, it's like open heart surgery for real, only there are
only you're going thousands, to work every day.
And there's thousands of people doing it at the same time on the same arteries,
and
the
by
same construction.
By the way, it hasn't risen suddenly, it's just risen suddenly in Temple.
Yeah.
We had it in Salado. They experimented with us for, what, 7 years?
Yes, the sign, they kept opening and closing new roads on a daily basis. It's so, just for the fun of it.
There was
no construction on some of them.
We lost about half the businesses in Salado during that period because nobody could figure out how to get to them.
Right.
So we do still have some commercials or PSAs or something to play. So we're going to get to that. And on the other side, you can give us a call here at the Personal Wealth Coach at 773-1400.
All right. We'll be back on the other end.
And And we're back with more of the Personal Wealth Coach, starring Jeff and
Jake
McClure. It's 10:53 where we are, and that means we only have about 6 or 7 minutes left in the first hour on this Saturday, July 15th, 2017. And you are welcome to give us a call in the last few minutes of this hour or into the next hour at 254-773-1400, the Personal Wealth Coach, and that's who we are.
Yeah, let me finish that last piece up about is the government doing it on purpose?
You think the government does anything on purpose?
Yeah, I never attribute to conspiracy what I could attribute to incompetency in the government.
Actually,
because I've seen the government and how it works. There may be some conspiracies out there, but
I'm going to be nice here, and I'm going to say, the complexities of keeping the traffic flowing on I-35 while you're tearing up the old I-35 and building a new one are pretty phenomenal. And yeah, you're going to see a higher accident rate, mainly though, because if you look at the way the speed limits drop, I don't know what your experience is, listeners, but my experience is coming into Temple where it says speed limit is 60 and everybody's still going 75. That's kind of a giveaway that maybe there's a problem there. If you slow down to the speed limit, your accident rate will collapse.
Yeah, let me finish up the other piece that we were talking about with Social Security. What we said kind of blithely is that Social Security has 17 years, but if you do the math and you see that the disability fund fails and then the people on disability by current law switch over to the retirement programs trust fund, it's closer to 8 years. That's not very far away. Just to let you know that there are big decisions that need to be made, and we are concentrating on the wrong things in that world. These are areas that we can look at and say this is a direct, very direct consequence to the entire economy. One of the big things that saved us from having the Great Depression again in 2007 and 8 and 9 is that there were a great deal of people being paid Social Security in the middle of this that weren't going to be laid off. It keeps a layer of stability in there. I don't think that everybody should be receiving unemployment benefits forever.
Well,
but retirement benefits are a different story.
I just looked it up again. 2034. Technically, Social Security runs out of money. At that point, when we say it runs out of money, it doesn't mean that everybody suddenly stops who's on Social Security, stops getting Social Security. What will happen is if at that point the people get 77% of the income they were getting the day before it ran out of money, then it'll work just fine. The money that's being paid into Social Security under the current law will fund it nicely if it drops to 77% at that point. How do you get it to drop to 77%? Or how do you extend everybody's full benefits for a longer period of time?
That's already in the law, by the way. As soon as that happens, it drops everybody's pay by 25%.
Okay, so it's close enough. 77, yeah. 75. This is the point. Could we avoid that happening? Because the people at the low end of the Social Security spectrum who for whatever reason don't have some retirement program other than Social Security are not doing particularly well on their Social Security check, and cutting their income by 25% would probably be pretty devastating to them. Whereas the people in the upper end of the income scale, their Social Security income is just kind of a nice-to-have item, and I strongly suspect at some point we will suddenly wake up and say, if you make more than this much money in a given year, your Social Security benefits are going to get cut.
Right. And here's the reason. You said technically 17 years. Let me tell you the reason why I was saying the 8 years, because it makes a lot more sense this way. In 2022, the projection is, and that's just 5 years away, the projection is that Social Security taxes will be receiving less revenue than's being paid out.
Well, actually, it's now already.
Right. Well, when we had a jump in Social Security revenue with the raising of people's employment. So there's more Social Security being paid in now. We're back on the positive side. it will be more than the total amount being collected, which means you have to dip into the trust fund. And there's something important. There's an H word that begins the trust fund. It's hypothetical. There's no cushion of money out there. The Congress has to start paying back their own IOUs. And in doing so, different math should be used, because now not only can we not use the taxes from Social Security to pay for other things on the general funds, we've got to use less and less money for the general funds to pay back the trust fund IOUs. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I was saying you do the math a little bit differently, and it looks like 8 years, unless Congress does something drastic, we've got 8 years left. That's a problem, because we would have to cut other major issues. We're about out of time for this hour. This is a bigger topic that we can continue with next hour. But if you would like to join us next hour, the numbers to call in here are 254-773-1400. If you would like to contact us off the air, you can reach voicemail locally at
254-947-1111.
And you can reach that same number toll-free, 1-800-914-7526, 800-914-PLAN. You can go to our webpage, thepersonalwealthcoach.com or tpwc.com. And you can email us directly at jeff@tpwc.com or jake@tpwc.com. Until next hour, this has been
Fair, Balance, your Fox News radio station in Central Texas. News Radio 1400 KTEM AM, Temple, Belton, Killeen, Fort Hood.